Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Believe in a power greater than what you are going through. When you don't know what to do,
that's right. When you don't know what to do, just keep breathing. From the City of Angels in Los Angeles and the Big Apple in New York City, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver at CaregiverDave.com, along with my lovely co-host Adrian Guberg at TheCaregiverSpace.org. And we're coming to you live and on demand. Hi, Adrian. We're coming to you live and on demand on 24/7, 21 global audio and video platforms. They just keep growing. iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, HealthyLife.net, Vimeo, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Mixcloud, Listen Notes, Blueberry, Player FM, Podcast.com, VIP, Internet Radio, TuneIn.com, Facebook Live, Owl's Tale, UBook, Castbook, and of course, CaregiverDave.com. We are proud to be voted number one caregiver podcast on the top 50 on Player FM and one of the top six best podcasts by Caring.com, as well as number three podcast out of thousands of caregiver podcasts on FeedSpot. And we have an exciting show, an exciting shoe planned for you today, don't we, Adrian?
Yeah, we do.
Ann Weisbrod, Director of Social Services at the Hebrew Home at Riverdale, has over 30 years' experience as a social worker. But before we get started, I want to take this moment to thank my last week's guest, Terry Wildman, author of In the Enchanted Boardroom, Evolve into an Unstoppable Intuitive Leader. Every caregiver should be a leader, don't you think? And just a reminder, you can watch or listen to that interview and all our interviews on all our membership website, caregiverdave.com, or any of our other 21 global platforms that I mentioned earlier, like iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, SoundCloud, etc. All right, enough of that. Welcome to the show, Anne. So excited to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. Just speak up as loud as you can. Project your voice so we can all hear you. And why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? I like to ask my guests, just who is Anne Weisbrod, and why were you put on this earth?
So, thanks again for having me. I have been a social worker for 32 years here at the Hebrew Home. I think I always knew I wanted to go into geriatric social work because I was very close to my grandmother. She was in a nursing home, and I spent every weekend going to visit her, and I just became so interested in everything that was going on around her. Not just her, the other residents, and that's how I got into this field. I'm married, I have two grown children, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. So was your mother, right?
My grandmother.
Grandmother. So was your grandmother in this facility also, or a different one?
No, she was actually in a facility in Queens, New York, and I still to this day can remember, you know, exactly what room she was in and where it was and everything about going to visit. It was just, you know, great. Most kids don't like going to nursing homes, but I loved it.
Yeah, and you know the good ones, because the good ones don't have all the wheelchairs and the elderly just staring at the walls doing nothing. They've got them occupied and you know, they're very organized,
engaged.
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you, Adrian. She finishes my sentences for me. So there's no greater work than being a caregiver, and I always like to say, just wait if you're not one, because you'll either be one or you'll need one. Somehow caregiving will touch your life one way or another. So I'm so excited to hear that you had the joy of being a caregiver. Tell me about caregiver dynamics when a loved one has to go or move to a nursing home. That can be very, very difficult for both the caregiver and the loved one, isn't it?
So, you know, think about it. No one ever says to themselves, oh, I can't wait to get older and go into a nursing home. You never hear that. In 32 years, I've never heard that.
Yeah.
So when the decision comes to have to place your loved one in a nursing home, you can only imagine the feelings that families may go through, the emotions that they feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
They promise that, Mom, don't worry, I'm never putting you in a nursing home.
Those promises that never should have been made, yes.
And, so there's a feeling of guilt. Maybe I should have done more. Could I have taken care of her? There's a feeling of anger. Why does she even need this nursing home? Why do I have to even make these decisions? There's the family dynamics that go on between siblings. Does one agree? Does one not agree? There's just so many emotions that go into placing. There's fear of the unknown. What's going to happen to them? How are they going to be taken care of? And all of that plays into, putting a relative in a nursing home. And that's where the team at the nursing home, social workers, nurses, doctors, everyone involved, have to really come together and support these families who have been caregivers and are actually, to some degree, relinquishing a little bit of that role to a complete stranger. Mm. And that's a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
They have to learn to let go and let go with love. It's a complicated thing.
Trusting someone you've never met.
Yeah. Well, how do we get over the guilt? Let's say that we made a promise, or our loved one made us make a promise never to put him in a nursing home, and now you realize they need 24/7 care because you need sleep. You can't stay up 24 hours a day every 2 hours turning them over so they don't get bed sores or whatever it is. How do you get out of that promise? How do you renege a promise and replace it with a good promise?
Good question. Not easy to answer. A lot of it depends, I think, on the ability of the relative, of the loved ones, to really understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
If that person really has capacity and is able to understand, there's a lot of conversation that needs to be had, tough conversations.
Yeah.
But definitely, sitting down and really talking about the needs, the safety issues, I know I may have said this to you, but we didn't know what we'd be facing, and here we are. And I want the best for you. I want to make sure you get the care you need and you're taken care of. And I can't do that. We need to work together and let someone else help us do that for you. It's not easy. It doesn't go away so fast.
Yeah, well, that's not bad.
I have a question about the Hebrew home in Riverdale. Are these apartments where people can actually bring their things and live and feel a little bit at home, or is this somewhere where everything is foreign?
So the beauty of the Hebrew home is that we have a continuum of care. So we have assisted living apartments, we have independent living apartments, and then we have the traditional nursing home. So certainly in the independent living and the assisted living, people tend to bring a little bit more from home.
They do.
It's a little bit more of a community type feel.
Yeah.
But when people do come into the nursing home, we encourage them. But obviously they can't bring all their furniture and dishes and all those
kinds of
things. We do really encourage them to make their space feel like home, because this is
right.
Their new home. And we encourage whatever will make them feel comfortable and safe.
Yeah.
I
found that was very important.
I'm not Jewish, but I would love to end up in a Jewish home because they take such good care of their elderly. Why is that? Why do Jews treat their elderly better than Gentiles? You don't think they do?
I don't know.
It's a true statement, though, right? I mean, I've visited people in Jewish homes, and I mean, there's just more love there. There's more dignity. There's more respect. They're treated so much better,
I think it's the culture of the nursing home, because that comes from the top down. And I think, you know, look, most of our staff that take care of our residents are not Jewish, but, and many of our residents are not Jewish, but.
Really? So I can, right? I can go, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, see, a lot of them won't let me. They'll say, no, you have to be Jewish.
But, you know, good leadership and a good culture. You know,
well, that's so nice. What is it, a 50-50 mix? What percentage?
Actually, I think it's even a little bit more the other way, a little less Jewish now.
Wow.
You see, I guess there's a lot of even people who feel like me. Yeah, that's a great selling point.
Yeah.
So, what should caregivers know about when visiting their loved ones in a nursing home or assisted living? Because this may be new to them. I always tell people, you know, 1 out of 10 of them are good, but 9 out of 10 of them I wouldn't put my cat or my dog in, you know. And there's different things, you know, like the smell test. What should people be looking for when looking for a nursing home or even an assisted living place? Maybe you can give them some advice.
So when you're looking to place your relative, and I do recommend looking at different places. It's like when you take your kids to college, you look at different schools. You're looking for exactly what you just said. You're looking to make sure that it doesn't smell, that it isn't dirty, that it has a clean appearance. But I think even more than that, you're looking at the faces of people that live here.
Yes.
Are you seeing, you know, maybe happy. But are you seeing good care? Are you seeing the residents themselves?
They're clean.
Well cared for. You know,
and they're wearing clothes that match.
Some of these people have been very isolated, you know, stuck at home, not moving around, waiting for their children to visit. And now all of a sudden they have the opportunity to have a community. And I've seen a few homes where that does happen. And they make friends.
That's actually, you know, when people say to me, well, why, you know, what are good things about a nursing home? Fortunately, there's often a negative connotation. The amount of socialization, you know, you're right. People sit at home. They think they want to stay home. But the truth is, they're alone. Here, you know, not everybody loves each other, but there are so many opportunities to socialize. There's activities. They're, you know, within the neighborhoods themselves, we call the floors neighborhoods. Off the floor, you know, this facility happens to have a magnificent property, acres and acres right on the Hudson. So we have the opportunity for people to socialize in the nice weather outside. Our staff encourages socialization and encourages people to get to know each other. We even have a dating program here. Yeah.
I'm ready.
to take off on changing.
Adrian's in the process of selling her house. Maybe you want to go right into there, Adrian.
Yeah, I was just saying. Yeah, I was thinking, do you have a 3-bedroom?
The whole idea is that we do want our residents not to feel isolated and not to feel alone and feel a part of, this is their home and this is now their community and we're privileged to come into it.
Do you have couples that move in?
Oh, yes. We do have many couples, actually. Some choose to live together, and some actually choose to live separate. Maybe this is a chance to get away with that.
They can finally get away from each other.
But, yes, we do. We have couples that come in together, and then we actually have couples that have met here.
And, yes.
Yeah.
This really sounds like fun. So it doesn't have to be a negative experience, you know. And like I always say, you know, I tell people if they made a promise that I'll never put you in a nursing home, you know, to just say, hey, I'm reneging on that promise, but I'm going to replace it with a better promise. I promise to give you the best care possible. And so many people are afraid of nursing homes until they get there, or even assisted living, you know, whatever the level it is. Of course, it depends on a great social director to make sure that great social things are happening. It sounds like you have a very good social director there.
Mm-hmm. We have, you know, the whole team, you know, we have an activity, we have an entire department devoted just to activities and maintaining all those different kind of events. And everyone works together. It's really a team approach.
Yeah. So what can families do to get, you know, support as their loved one ages and declines? Because everyone thinks about the loved one, but many times the caregivers are in worse shape than the loved ones because the loved ones are getting all the attention, all the energy. They're top on the list, and the caregivers get the short end of the stick. You know, they're not sleeping right, they're not eating right, they've lost their job or they've had to quit, and they've isolated themselves. They're friendless now because nobody wants to hang around them because they're so negative. What do you offer for caregivers, if anything?
That's a really good point because, you know, I just want to say when we have families coming to visit, you know, some of the families we deal with are, you know, they can be very challenging. They can be, you know, angry. They come in with a whole host of issues. And, you know, we have to recognize as professionals that they're going through a lot themselves, having their relative here. We actually offer support groups, particularly for families with relatives with dementia, because that's one of the hardest things. You know, if you come to visit and your relative is still able to converse with you and appreciate the visit and, you know, participate, it makes it a little bit easier. But when your relative has dementia, you know, it's hard enough to deal with that. And then you come to visit and maybe your mother doesn't remember you, your father doesn't know who you are. Where they're, you know, they're telling you things, you don't know if it's accurate or not. So we offer a support group for families who are dealing with relatives with dementia because they may not be the primary caregiver, but yet when they come to visit, they are that caregiver. And they're always maintaining that status, no matter whether their relative comes to the nursing home or not, because nobody knows their loved one better than their family. And we look to the families for help in caring. So we offer support groups. We recommend support groups in the community run by different agents. We recommend, you know, anything anybody would recommend, like exercise and just relaxation techniques and, you know, and whatever support one-on-one we give families when they come to visit to help them get through whatever it is they're getting through.
Yeah, and like my mother who had dementia, I would come and visit her, you know, 30-minute drive. And she would think that the last time I was there was like a month ago, and I was just there 2 days ago. And you know, you just get used to that because it's not their fault. They can't blame it.
Right.
And yet your paid caregivers, your staff, you know, a lot of people think that if you're a paid caregiver, you don't care or you don't, you know, have the same level of devotion as a unpaid family caregiver. But that's not true, is it? Your paid caregivers need that support as well, and they are subject to burnout also.
Actually, you know, the staff here, and, you know, maybe I'm a little biased. I've been here for a long time. But the staff here, you know, I really feel treat these residents as if they were treating their own parent. You know, the devotion, the caring, the just the going above and beyond what they need to do. Because they themselves understand, they, you know, they really get trained on what it's like to take care of someone who's entrusting their relative to you and the fear that family may be going through. Mm-hmm. And our staff, you know, do need support. That's the, you know, we meet with our staff. All different departments have support within their own department. And, you know, we also meet as, it's, you know, as teams to really support each other. No matter what the function is, you know, nurses, any dietitian, everyone needs support.
Right, and that's what Adrian and I do. We offer online support because a lot of times people can't physically go somewhere. So we're going to take a quick break, so we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Our featured speaker is a best-selling author who has written numerous books and articles. He's a speaker, life coach, and host of Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program. He frequently appears on television and radio shows all across the country and has even shared the stage with Suzanne Somers at Harvard. But his most important role is caregiver to his beautiful wife, Charlene, for over 22 years. Please welcome Mr. Dave Nassani!
I want to share with you a love story. In a couple of weeks, my wife and I will be celebrating 44 years of being together. My wife, Charlene, and I. had a fairy tale, storybook, romance, courtship, and marriage for the first 21 years of our lives together. One day, out of nowhere, my wife has a headache, the headache of her life. She suffered a massive stroke, and it left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. And in that moment, our world turned upside down. I gotta tell you, the next 2 years was like a living hell.
I just didn't know what to do. I felt guilty most of the time. I became a caregiver. I didn't even know what a caregiver was.
I was experiencing the same problems that other caregivers experience.
If you don't take care of you, I can't take care of her.
Well, that's why I wrote the book.
Now I can teach other caregivers.
I'm living proof that you can thrive as a caregiver. My wife and I travel now all over the world sharing our story. One day, life is gonna call upon you to be the captain of your boat. Heck, you might be saving your own life. Thank you.
Yeah. And we're back with Dave Nassani and Adrian Gruberg and Anne Weisbrod, Director of Social Services at the Hebrew Home at Riverdale. Anyway,
does that mean white bread?
Yes, it does.
How did you know that, Adrian?
Because my maiden name is Greenwald, and it means green forest. So these names all mean something. And Weisbrod is white bread.
I think there must have been a baker somewhere in my husband's family.
Now, the matchmaker makes matches. Is there a name maker in Jewish culture that comes up with the names?
I don't know what happened at Ellis Island, but...
Okay, so
yeah, at Ellis Island they used to shorten the names, or give people, if people's names were too confusing, they would just simplify it, and it wouldn't be Smith, but you know, they'd come up with something simple.
Yeah, what are some strategies for caregivers to interact with staff who provide care for their loved ones either at home or in a facility?
So that's a great question, because that sometimes is the most challenging for both sides, for both families and staff. The most important thing is to work as a team. Doesn't always feel that way, but you know, the families are as much part of the care team as we are, because as I said before, who knows their loved one best but them? And we rely on them for information and for background and for history. So when they come in, you know, the most important thing is mutual respect. To come in, you know, find the staff you need to speak to. If they're not available, you can ask for supervisors. There's always so many people to speak to. But make sure you get whatever information you need. I think communication is probably the most important and also sometimes the most challenging. And staff, too, need to look for those family members, you know, reach out to them. I know here, for example, we're constantly setting up meetings with families when we need to have a conversation, because we want to make sure everyone is included. But communication, I would say, is probably the most important on both ways.
I wanted to say there are so many people who begrudgingly will go see their loved ones in a facility. How do you soften their hesitancy of being there? And, you know, like, well, I come every week and nobody recognizes me, and I just don't like coming here. It's too depressing, whatever. How do you deal with that? Because it's a real problem around here.
Yeah, so I think, you know, back to the communication, I think the more that a family knows about what's going on with their loved one and how their loved one is truly doing, the easier it is to, you know, kind of inch your way in. And one of the things that I would say is that when someone first comes, we make a real effort to include the family, you know, in conversations. We even let them know after a day or so, listen, your mom's sitting at a table with a lot of people. She's talking. She's doing okay. You know, we got her down today to exercise. You know, We'll even take a picture of their mom or their, you know, their loved one doing something to send it to them so that they can see.
Right.
This is a scary place. This is their home now. And don't they want to go see their relative in their home? So, you know, communication and just providing that support. You know, we have an open door to families, you know, call us, let us know you're coming. We'll sit, we'll help you. We'll walk you around. We'll show you what you can do when you come to visit. That doesn't necessarily just involve sitting in your mother's room and listening to the same story, you know.
What a great place. What a great place.
You're also not just
dealing with Jewish people. You're dealing with other cultures. So, I mean, are there people who can address other issues? You know, other ethnic issues.
Yes, and that's important. You know, certainly we have staff who speak all different languages. Language is an issue, you know, for the family. We make sure we have translation services. But, you know, we also have activities geared toward different, for example, we have a Spanish.
Right.
We have, a variety of different things. So we try to incorporate as much as we can. We'll try to introduce those people to people who, who have commonality with them. So that they have something to talk about and something to do, and
right,
we do address that. Yeah.
Would you consider it multicultural? I mean, do you have an Asian population? Do you have a Muslim population?
We have everything.
Really?
I don't know everything. Maybe that's an overstatement. But
Puerto Rican, everything.
How many residents do you service?
You said it's very big.
I'm approximating, but it's approximately about 725.
Wow, that's a
large facility. Yeah.
And you manage to keep it real home-like and cozy. How do you do that with such a large population?
You got to come visit us to see exactly where we're at. You know, we're on the Hudson. We have exhibits. We're also a museum. We're a designated.
Wow. So people can come and look at the pictures and stuff who have nothing to do with it?
I can just get my car and drive up there this weekend to see.
Adrian, check it out. Check it out for us.
We have a Judaica Museum, and then throughout the facility we have Andy Warhol, we have Matt, Max, we have many different artists and so.
We like to be able to refer people to places that we know of and can, we go there ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Come visit. I'll take you on a tour.
It's a date.
I'd like that.
Anytime.
So how can you help from a team between your doctors, families, and other care providers? Because a lot of times, we forget that a doctor's in the equation too. You know, they might be having some problems swallowing, for example, or some side effect to a medication, or maybe they're on too many medications and they're acting like a zombie. I have found from personal experience that the doctors of facilities like these are really crappy because you wonder, they don't really care about the patients. They just come in, they make their rounds. You know, it's just another name on the list, and then they're gone. And this doctor just came out of the woodwork. I mean, it has nothing to do with my mother's doctor, who I would have much rather have them, but because they're in a facility, now they're covered under a different plan or something. So tell us about your doctors. Are they kind of, just tell us about them.
No, I'm happy to, because we are an unusual, maybe, a little more unique in that our doctors are here all the time. We have 24/7 medical coverage.
Staff.
The doctors are not just coming in from the outside, visiting patients and leaving.
That makes a difference.
They support the team. So in other words, one doctor has a set caseload, and those floors, the neighborhoods, are hers or his. So they become as attached and familiar with the residents as the rest of the staff, because they are the regular doctor. It's not just a fly-by-night kind of thing. So, when you ask, the team is, you know, every member of the team, you know, has an important role. And our team consists of a dietitian, and obviously the nurses, social worker, doctor, activities, nurse manager. So, and if they need physical therapy, the physical therapists are involved. And we meet with the families as a team. It's, you know, we don't just, you know, the doctor's as much part of that as anybody else. So we are fortunate to have that kind of setup. So,
wow.
No fly kind of thing.
It just gets better and better.
this is a it's a difficult question. How do you deal with end of life care?
It's difficult, but it's every day. So, fortunate. We have an end of life committee. We also have a palliative and hospice care supervisor in nursing and in other disciplines. End-of-life care is very, very important to us and very relevant every single day. So we have
and you work with the families as well on that.
We work with the families 100%, and we also offer hospice service. So we have two programs. Yeah, we have palliative care and we have hospice. So palliative care is an in-house way of thinking and meeting with the resident. If they have capacity, they can dictate their own end-of-life care or families to talk about what would they want if they need more help. Do they want to go to the hospital? Do they want blood work? Do they want to be weighed every day? You know, what do they want to see at end-of-life? But for those residents and for those who are further along, we offer hospice services through an outside hospice provider who comes in and takes that case of the resident, and they don't have to move rooms. They stay in the whatever room they're in. Hospice comes to them. Of not just the Hebrew Home staff, because of course we're still their primary caregivers.
Yes.
In the facility, but now they have the hospice team as well, coming in, you know, and providing that extra level of end-of-life care. So for us, end-of-life care is daily. It's you know, it's something that we really, forerunners in.
It's an issue that has to be dealt with. That's why I brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%. That's, you know, for the caregivers, for the families, that's, you know, that's a whole other hurdle. You know, you finally get, you know, used to getting your relative here and adapting. And
right.
Just take a turn for the worse, and now, you know, it's a whole other level of anxiety and emotion, and
yeah.
So we really have a lot of staff that deals specifically with that.
So let's talk about food, because the number one criticism most seniors have about their facility is the food that they serve them. They compare it to hospital food or airline food. I'm sure that's not the case with you. Tell us about your food.
So, food is a huge issue. It's funny. I run the resident council here, which is like the resident governing body of the home. And food always...
Are you the official taster?
I do eat the food here. You know, the staff get the same food as the residents. How could it be? You know,
the residents eat the same food that the staff eats.
We have an amazing kitchen. It's a huge kitchen. You not only feed the nursing independent living.
Can you say that line again? You cut out.
Yeah, you cut out.
So the food is actually, our kitchen is an amazing kitchen because they're feeding not only the 700 plus nursing home residents, the assisted living residents and the independent living residents. It's a kosher facility. So we, you know,
it is kosher.
The food actually is great. But, you know, as I say to the residents, I have two kids. I serve one meal. One likes it and one doesn't. And that's just the way it's going to be. You can never please everyone all the time. But maybe I'm biased, but I think the food is great. So, you know, but you're always going to have people complain. I can't say they won't.
And some people just won't eat because they don't have an appetite or whatever.
And you know what? There are a lot of women here who, you know, were really amazing in their day and took a lot of pride in their cooking. And, you know, you might hear, well, I wouldn't have made it that way.
Right.
Right.
You know, and that's okay. That's okay, too, you know.
So I usually
end up... It's not like I would make it.
I usually ended up visiting my mother, and it always seemed to be during lunchtime and dinner time, and they would serve the food, and she would just pick at it. And I would say, "What?" And I would taste it. And I said, "Man, this is really good, Mom. Come on and eat this." You know, and I would encourage her to eat, but it was good. You know, she was in a good facility. We're going to take another break, so we will be right back. Please don't go away, because we're in the home stretch here.
We are a community of caregivers that understands and supports you wherever you are in your journey. We are a place to connect with other caregivers, but more importantly, a place to get practical, actionable help. There are lots of ways for you to get support. First of all, you can download our welcome pack. This will get you started on your Thrive journey. Next, you can ask and get answers to your questions by posting them here in our private Facebook groups. You can also get live online support by attending one of our live weekly Connect webinars. You can get practical, actionable advice by listening to our weekly podcast. You can hear and read other stories about other caregivers' experiences. Plus, add your own in our weekly Share Your Story forum, posted every Tuesday in the Facebook group. You can access essential resources and download practical Thrive Solutions packs, all of which are geared to help you thrive as a caregiver. You get lifetime access to all of our resources. Again, we are here to support you and help you thrive and to enjoy your life as a caregiver. And remember, this is a place to get hope, not just cope.
And we're back on the Caregiver Dave Show with Ann Weisbrod and Arlene Adrian Gruberg. Wow, I got marbles in my mouth.
Right, my mother called me Arlene.
Yeah. With Adrian Gruberg, and I'm Dave Nastani. And we're in the home stretch here. Well, who I spoke with, was it Wendy? She says, an hour, that's such a long time. I says, it goes fast, trust me. Yeah, it's intimidating at first, but there's just so much to talk about. And why, for example, is intergenerational interactions so important, and what can caregivers do to help foster it? You know, so we're talking about the different generations of the family, sometimes the grandkids, the kids, the parents, the grandparents. So what's going on there, and what can caregivers do to help foster it?
So, you know, we find, you know, that our residents really, really love seeing children. It doesn't have to be little children, children of all ages, their grandchildren, nieces, nephews. And we encourage our families to bring their young children to visit. First of all, there's so much to do here. But I think it's important to expose children to their just because the grandparents in a nursing home or in assisted living or... You know, it can seem a little, what they might perceive as frightening. I think the parents think it's going to be frightening, but the truth of the matter is if you expose your children, this is where their grandparents or their relatives live.
Yeah.
This is home, and it's important to bring them. And there's so much to learn from being around, you know, older people. So don't stay away just because it's a nursing home. And we actually not only encourage our families to bring their kids, we have a volunteer department that is also an intergenerational, they provide a lot of intergenerational programs. So we also have schools coming in. There are local schools that do different programs here. And
that's
we have schools
great.
That, you know, like volunteers who just sit and take the residents outside in the nice weather. And they get, not only do our residents get so much out of it, but the kids get so much out of it. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
That's great.
And you see elderly people who maybe, you know, have this, the lights are on, but nobody's home look. And all of a sudden, you know, I've seen nursing homes that bring in children's choirs. And all of a sudden they just light up and they start talking. Oh, come here, honey. You know, whatever they think, whether it's their own grandchild or whatever. But seniors love kids and they just open them up and they bring out the best in them.
And you'd be surprised because when the little kids come and they come frequently, you realize they love, not only do the seniors love the kids, but the kids really love being around the seniors too.
Yeah, because maybe they're not around seniors. Maybe they've never seen anyone who's over 80 years old with all the wrinkles and you know, think they're real cute and cuddly like a pet, you know. It's fun.
Do you have any pet therapy? I mean,
good question.
Yes, actually we do. We have a few in-house dogs. They are, we have a couple from varying sizes, and they do visits throughout the facility by our activity department, our therapeutic arts and enrichment program. You know, we try to identify when people come in what their likes and their dislikes are. So when we find out that someone was a real pet lover, we try to encourage them. You know, we bring the dogs to them. We actually, I don't remember the exact timing, but sometime around the summer, we actually had a miniature horse here that walked around and provided so much enjoyment. So we're very big fans of pet therapy, and it's been really just a great thing. And we encourage our families, if they have pets, they bring them to visit.
Well, I'm sold. Where do I sign up? And I think Adrian's found a place to live now.
Well, after I tour the place, I might just sign up.
Is there an age limit?
You mean how old someone might be or how young they might be?
The minimum. I'm sure there's no limit on the how old they are, right?
But
I'm
old, sure there's over 30 centenarians.
How young does a person have to be before they're not eligible?
Most of our residents are long-term residents, people who are here, you know, because this is their home.
Yeah, some 40-year-olds get dementia, don't they?
Yes, they do. And for dementia, we have some younger residents. For the most part, I would say most of our long-term residents are, you know, pretty much 70 and above, though now we're seeing more and more, as you say, younger people coming in because, you know, of needs. We also have a rehab population that we've had 40-year-olds here for rehab with the goal of going home. If they break something, they have no one at home to take care of them. They'll come here. So we have a big...
you do it all.
That's like me because I'm a single woman and... You know, I've got my long-term care policy, and I had a knee replacement and needed rehab, and I was very lucky that I had someone to take care of me. But if I didn't, I could have come to you for that.
Exactly. So that's why the range in age really is quite big now.
And you take Medicare, obviously.
Yeah, Medicare, Medicaid. I have to be honest, insurance is not my specialty, but
And obviously you take long-term care policies as well.
Yes. So the admission process goes through all of that financial stuff.
So how many acres is this facility? How big is it in acres? How many city blocks and boulevards?
It's over 13 acres. I don't remember the exact acreage.
Wow!
You must come.
Yeah.
All right.
How many short blocks and how many long blocks would that be by New York City?
Between 261st and 254th, so it's quite a distance.
You've got a nice view.
Is big.
Nice view on the Hudson.
Yeah, we're right on the Hudson, so these views in Manhattan would be millions of dollars, and here we are, our residents can enjoy it every day.
So as far as the price point, are you in the middle, in the top, and the bottom, or are you average? The price point.
You know what, that really varies because it depends on the level of care.
Yeah.
There are some people who require more care, and therefore...
Yeah.
And it's really a matter of people who come in private pay, if they have money, come in.
Right.
But, I would say a lot of people go through that money quickly. And then once they do, the home helps them apply for Medicaid if that's necessary.
Yeah.
So there's a varying range of prices.
Right.
I don't know what to compare it to, honestly, so I don't know where we stand in the rankings, but, you know, it kind of varies.
Well, it's amazing. You've been a great guest, and you have a great facility. I'm very impressed. It takes a lot to impress me. And I know it's not easy to find a facility. Is this franchise at all, or are you just strictly in New York?
No, we're a non-for-profit facility. This is our only site. In terms of the nursing home, this is our only site. But in terms of our community programs, we're within the Bronx. We have different housing programs within the community as well, not just only on the Hebrew property, you know, in Riverdale, but we have other sites of other.
Wonderful.
And you have other people on staff who do things like yoga, for example. Tell us a little bit about that.
We have chair yoga. We have regular yoga. I really will blow your mind now, but we have a swimming pool. So we have residents.
Is it
swim.
Heated?
It is. We have residents swim. We have many, many exercise classes. We have a gym. With regular gym equipment for our residents who are capable of managing that on their own. And we just have a ton of different activities and variety of exercise programs.
That does it. That's
13 acres. You could have a miniature golf course.
We probably do.
We have a little
putting green, yeah. Well, so how can we find out more? How can we schedule a tour? What's your website? Who's in charge?
It's riverspring.org.
Riverspring, RIVERSPRING.
.org.
Just those two words, Riverspring.
Yeah.
It's not Riverspring Health. It's Riverspring.
RiverspringHealth.org. Yeah.
Okay.
And if you want to call, you can dial 1-800-56-SENIOR, and you'll reach our intake care managers. And depending on what you're looking for, they will provide a tour, whether it's the nursing home, the assisted living, the independent living. You want to see all of them. The beauty of the Hebrew home is that we have a continuum of care. So if you are in one of our community buildings, and you need the nursing home at some point, you know, that's the beauty of having it all here.
Wow. That's amazing. Thank you so much for coming on and making this happen, even though there was some confusion in making it all happen. We appreciate it. Adrian, how do we get a hold of you at the Caregiver Space?
It's Adrian at thecaregiverspace.org, and all the links to social media are listed there, and we're very active. We've got a big bunch of communities now, and we're starting a special program on the 17th. So I'll talk more about it, you know, after I speak with Corey and really, really know what it's about.
Yes,
it's to help keep caregivers from burning out, but it's from a different point of view.
Yes, and I'm sure you've noticed, but we have a new introduction and a new outro for our show.
Lovely
singer-songwriter from Nashville, Tennessee, Steve Seiler, who does an amazing caregiver ministry called Music for the Soul. And he's had over 550 of his songs performed by famous artists, and he's a Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter. And so with that, we will close with one of his favorite songs, one of my favorite songs for caregivers, Keep Breathing. Bye-bye.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again.